From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist David K. Johnston counters the myth that public workers' pensions are costing taxpayers, exposing what he calls really bad reporting in Wisconsin. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ohio State Senate has advanced a measure that would end collective bargaining rights for state employees. On Wednesday, the Republican-controlled chamber approved the legislation on a 17-16 vote. Six Republicans joined with Democrats in opposition. The measure is even more far-reaching than a similar bill in Wisconsin because it would also affect police officers and firefighters. The vote came one day after some 20,000 people rallied at the state capitol in Columbus to oppose the bill. The Ohio House is expected to approve the measure next week. If enacted, Ohio would become the biggest state so far to curb the rights of public sector unions. The standoff over Wisconsin's anti-union bill continues to intensify. On Wednesday, Republicans in the state Senate advanced a proposal to fine Democrats $100 for each day they remain absent to stall the vote. 14 Democrats fled to Illinois last month to deny Republicans quorum. The measure also calls on Wisconsin police to help find and return the Democrats to Madison. The vote came one day after Walker unveiled a budget that would drastically cut education spending and eliminate some 21,000 state jobs. Efforts to slash social spending in the name of budget deficits continue across the country. In Pennsylvania, over 40,000 have been dropped from a state-subsidized insurance program for the working poor. Newly elected Republican Governor Tom Corbett cut the program, Adult Basic, citing a $4 billion budget deficit. The New York Times describes the move as, quote, one of the largest disenrollments in recent history. Before it closed, the program had been unable to keep up with massive demand. Over 505,000 people had been on its waiting list for enrollment. Meanwhile, in Washington, Democratic Governor Christine Gregoire has dropped 17,500 adults from a state-funded program for the working poor. Meanwhile, Arizona Republican Governor Jan Brewer has proposed eliminating coverage for some 250,000 people. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, labor protests are continuing across the country as Republican lawmakers attempt to push through legislation aimed at crushing collective bargaining rights. While covering the unfolding events in Wisconsin over the last 2 weeks, many media outlets have repeatedly aired Governor Scott Walker's claim that state workers should contribute more to health care and pension costs.
But most importantly, there are 5.5 million people in this state, taxpayers who, by and large, are sacrificing in their own jobs in the private sector, paying much more than the 5.8% for pension and the 12.6% for health care I'm asking for. In fact, in many cases, two or three times that amount. They've made tough sacrifices to balance the budgets in their communities, in their homes, and in their businesses. I think it is realistic that we need to make sure that as loud as the voices are in the Capitol, we don't let them overpower the voices of the taxpayers I was elected to represent and elected to get the job done, which is balancing this budget.
Many journalists have parroted Walker's claim that unionized state workers get their pensions subsidized by the state. However, investigative reporter and Pulitzer Prize winner David K. Johnston recently exposed the deeply flawed media coverage of Walker's bill by challenging his core assertion. Johnston's piece for Tax.com is called Really Bad Reporting in Wisconsin: Who Contributes to Public Workers' Pensions? In the piece, Johnston counters the myth that workers' pensions are costing taxpayers by pointing out that workers themselves contribute 100% in deferred compensation.
David K. Johnston joins us now from Rochester, New York. Welcome to Democracy Now!, former New York Times reporter, Pulitzer Prize winner, author of several books, including Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. So why don't you demystify what the reporting has been? Where are the lies? Where are the untruths, the half-truths?
Well, Amy, here's the fundamental key point, and I have to tell you, from the hundreds and hundreds of emails I've gotten and the hundreds of blogs have taken this up, many Americans don't seem to get this. All of your compensation is earned. It's not just your cash wage. If you work for a private employer and you get a paid vacation, that's not a gift from your employer. You earned it. They don't give that paid vacation to some Joe walking down the street. And what the governor has done is confused internal accounting, which has no economic substance to it, with the economic substance. These are negotiated contracts, and how the money flows, whether it goes through the worker's paycheck and then to the pension and then to the insurance company, or it goes directly to the medical insurance company or the pension plan, is irrelevant to the total cost. Now, there's a perfectly legitimate issue. Are teachers and police detectives and fisheries biologists paid too much money in Wisconsin? I don't know the answer to that, and I didn't offer any insights onto that point. But the fundamental important point here is the workers earned this, and so the governor really wants to cut their wages. And instead of saying, I want to cut the wages of these people, he has used this false argument, and it's let loose, my column has, an enormous amount of vitriol against teachers and police officers and how they're all parasites. And it's astonishing to me how successful he's been in demagoguing this.
But yet several polls that have come out in recent days, Wall Street Journal, NBC, and New York Times, CBS, both say that at least the majority of Americans don't believe that a tax on collective bargaining or that even that a large group of Americans, I think about 40%, don't believe that public workers are overpaid. Yet the minorities are ones apparently are the ones that are raising the biggest ruckus over this issue.
Exactly right, Juan. And, you know, we have settled the law that you have a right to collectively bargain. And to those people who pose as conservatives or libertarians and want to get rid of the unions, here's what they're arguing. And these are people, remember, who say they don't like big government. They want each individual seeking a job with the state to negotiate with the big government. Somehow that just isn't coherent philosophy. And I'm not the least bit surprised that overwhelmingly the public feels people should be able to bargain. You know, it was when we had roughly a third of workers in the private sector in unions that people had higher pay. We've now gone a 30-year period where 90% of Americans are making one penny more for every dollar they made in 1980. And in the last 10 years, my column at tax.com this morning points out, average wages have fallen, median wages have fallen, government income tax revenues are down a third, one-third from the end of the Clinton administration. So we have lots of misinformation out there that's upsetting people.
But I'd like to ask you also about this issue, the general assault on pensions that has been occurring across the country. Wisconsin is one example. You correctly point out that their pension fund is not in bad shape, whereas others in other states are deeply troubled in terms of being able to meet their obligations. But the problem has been largely that over the last 20 years, many of these, especially over the last 10 years, many of these pension funds have not increased in value as a result of the problems on the stock market. First the dot-com crash, and then obviously the home mortgage and the economic crisis of 98-99, so that many of them have lost value, and that the root problem of the inability of some of these pension funds to pay their benefits is a result of the stock market more than anything else, isn't it?
Well, yes, but the stock market being down, I contend, is a result of tax policy, that it is these tax cuts that are making us poor. But, Juan, there's a very interesting pattern here. Social Security has dedicated funding. It has a surplus of over $2 trillion in it. The Republicans keep trying to make people think it's the cause of the deficit. The Wisconsin pension is 99.7% funded. By the alternative measure used, it's more than 90% funded. And it's under attack. How interesting that the best financed government programs, the ones that provide benefits to ordinary working people, are the ones that are being attacked by creating this impression, this false impression, that they are the cause of the problem. In the U.S. last year, states and local governments gave at least $70 billion to corporations. Here in Western New York, where I live, one of the counties gave Verizon effectively over $600 million to create 200 jobs that'll pay, I expect, about $50,000 on average. That's crazy. That's over $3 million per job. Yahoo got a deal at over $2 million per job. Alcoa has a deal for cheap electricity from the public that's way beyond the wages of the workers. These are massive transfers of money from you and me and the audience in this show to the already wealthy because they're not running their businesses well enough to make profits on their own. So why do we have massive subsidies and welfare for these very large corporations and attack well-funded government programs?
David K. Johnson, I want to ask you about this issue of corporate taxes and recent comments made by former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, the likely 2012 Republican presidential contender. On Saturday, he was interviewed by Lee Fang of the website thinkprogress.org.
Governor, today liberals are demonstrating all over the country in what CBS has called a liberal version of the Tea Party. Their main complaint is that a lot of corporations aren't paying their fair share. For example, Bank of America in 2009 paid nothing in corporate income taxes, same with ExxonMobil, GE, and a lot of other big corporations. Do you think corporations like Bank of America should pay their fair share? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think actually the corporate tax rate in Minnesota and in the country is too high. And one of the things I think we could and should do.
Do you think zero is too high with Bank of America paying nothing?
We have the highest corporate tax rate or one of them in the
OECD. But they use loopholes in offshore bank accounts to pay nothing.
Well, one of the things I've called for is reducing tax rates and looking at exemptions or special deals within the tax code that gives certain companies privileges or benefits. I can't speak to what any individual country or company would get in that regard, but I think one goal or direction for tax reform is to do simplify and reduce tax rates and clean out as many of the special deals as possible.
To be clear, do you think Bank of America pays too much in taxes already?
I think he answered that question.
I don't know firsthand what Bank of America pays in taxes, but I will just say, setting aside Bank of America, the corporate tax rate in the United States of America is too high compared to our competitor nations.
Probable presidential contender Tim Pawlenty interviewed by thinkprogress.org. David K. Johnston, your response.
Well, corporate income taxes in this country are one-third lower than they were in 2000. That's in my column this morning at tax.com. Even though corporate profits are up 60% and corporations have almost $2 trillion in cash, they're approaching $7,000 of cash for every man, woman, and child in the United States. They're not investing this money. They're not creating jobs. They are hoarding this money that they have pulled out of the economy. It's one of the reasons we're in so much trouble. Now, as to the argument that our tax rate is too high, it is because of all of these special favors. The reason the tax code has grown and grown and grown and grown and grown isn't because of people like you and me and the audience. It's because of all these favors being bought from politicians. At tax.com, we have something called the Shelf Project, and eminent authorities in tax have shown how we could raise $1 trillion a year. That would double the revenue we get. It's equal to the revenue we get from the individual income tax by shutting down loopholes and favors for businesses, particularly the oil and gas and pharmaceutical industries. The fact is, the very largest corporations, the ones who are the vast majority of wealth in America, they pay an effective tax rate of about 15% of their profits. And one fundamental truth people need to know, Amy, you can't have an individual income tax if you don't have a corporate income tax, because otherwise wealthy individuals who own businesses will simply live off their business and the businesses will become storehouses of untaxed wealth. That's one of the big problems in our tax system. You know, the hedge fund manager John Paulson made $9 billion in the last 2 years. Unless he chose to take money out of his plan, he pays no taxes on that money. You can make $1 billion or $5 billion a year in a single year and pay no taxes for years or decades into the future while working people have their taxes taken out every week.
And you mentioned that corporate taxes are down about 30% since 2000. But take us back a few decades further back. How has the tax rate, especially at the high income, personal income level and corporate tax rate, trended in the United States since the 50s and 60s?
Well, there's another column of mine at tax.com. I'm sorry to sound like an advertising machine. That shows that from 1961 to 2006, the very highest income taxpayers have had their tax burden reduced 60%, while everybody else has had a reduction of 20%. And it's the incomes at the top that have exploded. The corporate tax rate used to be 50%. Now it's 35%. And let me make some of what I think is a very important counterintuitive argument. When tax rates are low, I believe there is a sound argument that it destroys jobs. The reason is, you imagine for a moment you're a plutocrat. that you're very, very, very wealthy and you own a business and your spouse wants to buy a Modigliani painting to hang in your living room that costs $85 million. If the tax rate's 50%, it's going to cost $170 million to get that painting. If the tax rate's 15%, it only costs $100 million. You're far more likely to withdraw the $100 million than the $170. We used to have a high corporate tax rate as a way to coerce and encourage owners of businesses to reinvest in the business, which creates more jobs. We've now replaced it with a system that encourages them to withdraw money and not reinvest it. And that's what the cash you're seeing is about. It's about the proliferation of corporate personal jets, not owned by the company, but by individuals, of people who own 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 mansions. Remember, John McCain couldn't remember how many homes his family had. And so low tax rates destroy jobs. They encourage withdrawals from business instead of encouraging owners to keep reinvesting in the business.
David K. Johnston, we want to thank you for being with us. Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist. His most recent book, Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. Former New York Times reporter, now writes at Tax.com. This is Democracy Now! Back in a minute. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shrifoto Kadusar, Mate, Nermain Sheikh, Steve Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.